Also, we have raised the issue of beneficiation in the portfolio committee, and we raised the issue of the tax recapitalization that we missed an opportunity of ensuring that when we were implementing a tax recapitalization, we also had a condition of saying that those cars should be manufactured or assembled here in South Africa, and we didn't do that. Again, we have Shovagalula. We are supplying bicycles to the school, and we are not manufacturing them in South Africa, and we think that is a job opportunity. We have shipyards in South Africa that are underutilized. We are talking the revitalization and rehabilitation of the railway infrastructure and the acquisition of the new rolling stock, and we are not sure as to whether we will buy those trains as finished products without ensuring that manufacturing takes place in South Africa. But we are also interested in seeing how the plan of the Department of Transport in terms of the transportation industry development relates to poverty reduction. There are areas that are called presidential poverty northern point. And we also in China saw that it is the Chinese government that directs investment into areas so that there would be job opportunities in underdeveloped areas. Not everything is happening in developed cities in China. They strategically position underdeveloped areas and prepare the infrastructure so that it attracts investment. And we are asking these questions because the Minister for Transport is also the chairperson of an infrastructure cluster in cabinet, which then would then make it easy to influence such decision and also have an understanding at departmental level as to which underdeveloped areas are targeted for development when we talk transport in terms of infrastructure development, but also in terms of the development of the industry. In our plan, we are going to undertake oversight, and we are going to focus on the maritime industry, and we are also going to focus on the railway industry to look at the capacity, the manufacturing capacity that we have around those areas, the job opportunities around those areas. I'm not going to talk about the oversight that we are undergoing, we are going to undertake that are in relation to the road maintenance, because we are going to start with that to look at the implementation process that is happening in the road maintenance now that there is a fund dedicated to that, and there is a program that has been launched with Humberstone. We are then going to target the municipalities to see that that implementation is happening at that level, because those are the most affected areas. But then we are then saying, present to us the plan of the department on the new growth path, skills development and job creation, the transport industry, because we are going to go on the ground also. We have identified those areas, the railway and the maritime, to go and see what is happening on the ground and what potential do we have as a country before we even undertake the study tours to other countries that are doing well in the maritime. So that is what we have invited you for today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps I'll start by apologizing on behalf of the DG. He would have liked to join us, but unfortunately, because of an international commitment, he was unable to join us. My name is Lawrence Venkile, the acting. He would have loved to be here, Chairperson. My name is Lawrence Venkile, the acting COO of the department. I'm accompanied by Mr. Meketsu Sekhudo, who's our Chief Director for Economic Regulation, will be taking us throughout the detailed presentation. Just before that, there are a few contextual issues, I think, on the presentation that I just want to highlight, so that as we go through the presentation, members keep it in the back of their minds. When we presented the strategic plan to the portfolio committee, I think the teacher highlighted the new strategic trust in relation to setting the agenda for the sector, rather than an inward-looking strategy only looking at the department. And I think also it's in that context that also looking at our obligation and and the interventions in relation to the new growth path and the various projects that we're undertaking, because we seek to take that integrated approach. Just to highlight just a few things, the one approach towards non-motorized transport. We have been saying, while the emphasis may be on Shobhakalula as an initiative, but non-motorized transport provides an invaluable opportunity to make certain interventions, both in terms of access, rural mobility, when we're talking about those kids who need access to schooling, when we talk about infrastructure, that we need to begin to encourage a culture in the country of non-motorized transport. So therefore, we need to move towards integrating non-motorized infrastructure. When we're talking about scholar transport, but not only in the rural setting, but even in the urban setting, as part of the interventions of towards the our interventions in relation to reducing emissions, if we're able to get people on the bicycles rather than using cars, whether you're taking kids to school or utilizing old vehicles. But also in relation to creating industries, the manufacturing elements that the chair was talking about, not only to simply manufacture the bicycles that the government wants to give out, but also to create a space where it becomes a norm rather than an exception for South Africans to use non-motorized transport and bicycles and have our own capabilities. The ITC interventions, which we also talk about in the presentation, where we look at how do we create manufacturing capability in the transport space in the country, we have been talking with the ITC in relation to those. I think we'll deal with in the presentation. But also the last part I wanted to flag, Chair, was in relation to the skills issues, the kind of challenges, in fact, the developmental trajectory we've identified in the strategy requires us to begin to work together with the industry, saying if as a country we're saying we want to make significant interventions in maritime, want to introduce coastal shipping, and want to to build that capability? What are the skills that the country and the industry requires, and how do we make those interventions? In aviation, if we say our aviation, we need to develop our aviation infrastructure beyond the Accra airports and create opportunities there. What does that mean? What are those skills gaps that we need to collectively? TITA, we've been talking to TITA, we're saying must come to the part such that there's synergy in our approach. Without preempting the detailed presentation, I'll ask Mr. Sekudu to quickly take us through the presentation, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Venkile. Good morning, honorable members, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for the opportunity given to the department. I think given the background that the chairperson has given to us, I think it indicates to me and probably to Mr. Venkile that there are certain areas that we probably have to work on in responding to what you have mentioned, honorable chair. But I think we will present what we have prepared, given the invitation that was given to us. And maybe out of the discussions, we can then see how we go forward. My duty is quite simple. It's just to give you a presentation and then see what would be the outcome from this. The presentation scope, based on the invitation, would look at a brief background on IPAP, as well as NGP, which is a new growth path, which I think the members would know more. And it will then go through the actual contribution of the transport sector towards both a program or strategy. We have since nominated or highlighted these areas, not forgetting that we have other areas such as your BRT, the high-speed railway network, which may contribute to this program, but due to certain reasons, we couldn't basically capture it yet. But I think we will discuss it about this area. We'll look at the skills development program, both from the internal perspective and from the external perspective. Internal, we mean the department itself. Then external, we mean the transport sector as a whole. Then touch a bit on what is the contribution of state-owned entities reporting to transport in terms of skills development and job creation, and then conclude. Just to kickstart the presentation, in terms of the new growth path, the commitment that has been made by government basically is to create 5 million jobs in the next 10 years, which is by 2020. But the real intention is actually having identified key areas that would create massive jobs and job opportunities, which is your large-scale job creation opportunities. And those areas, particularly related to the transport sector, is the infrastructure development, which has an opportunity to create massive opportunities. I have noted the fact that the chairperson has indicated that the area of job creation should not only be on infrastructure. There's the scope for improvement in other areas, which probably is something that we'll consider further going forward. And then I think the other important area in terms of the new growth path is the fact that necessary policies would have to be developed to ensure that there's a conducive environment of actually creating jobs. Then in relation to the Industrial Policy Action Plan, the initial one was launched in February 2010, just to give information there, which probably you might know. And then there was a relaunch in February 2011. This plan basically is more towards emphasizing issues of local content, which the country should drive going forward, and it has identified transport sector as indeed one of the sectors to actually help to drive this process, as the chair has indicated as well. So what we will then do with our presentation is to see how the transport sector, using these these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 examples, contributing towards your IPAP 2 as well as your new growth path. So I will then tackle each one of them, giving you information in terms of what is happening now and what we anticipate to do and what would be the contribution towards job creation for each program. The first program, which has been spoken about by the Minister as well as by the Honourable Members, it's the Sihamba Sonke program. What we have noted from the background of the chairperson is the fact that the emphasis will be more in implementation going forward in terms of monitoring and all that stuff. But from the perspective of planning from the department is the fact that there's a 22 billion rands allocated for the next 3 years, 6.4 billion rands for the current financial year, and the opportunities for jobs in total is basically for the current financial year, it's just over 68,000 jobs that will be created, and each province would contribute these job opportunities. The one with the highest job creation opportunities is KZN and Eastern Cape, and you would then see in the budget vote that much budget as well has been allocated to these provinces. Hence, you would see that there's higher contribution of job opportunities for these two provinces. I wouldn't dwell much on this slide because I think it's something that you know, but it's important to flag it that indeed it's one of the critical programs that will contribute towards a new growth path. When we look at Shova Galula, as Mr. Venkile has indicated, this is one of the critical program that will contribute to non-motorized transport, particularly around ensuring that there's a proper public transport system. The idea, though, is to promote cycling as a low-cost mobility solution, targeting scholars, women, and farm workers. Indeed, we agree with the chairperson and the members the fact that there should be a promotion of local content by ensuring that there's manufacturing of bicycles in the country. So the department is currently planning to establish micro businesses or manufacturing plants in the country so that bicycles can be manufactured in the country. The intervention that have been put in place basically to create this environment is to currently make sure that we finalize the NMT, which is the non-motorized policy, non-motorized transport policy, and ensure that there are standards and regulations. We need to ensure that we include the non-motorized transport in the Road Traffic Act. We need to ensure that we developed a non-motorized transport infrastructure and in municipalities. I've spoken to the fact that there should be a promotion of ensuring that we establish a manufacturing plants, which we call the micro businesses in the country. What the benefits of this program would be in the year 2012, 2013, and 2014 is the fact that it is anticipated that 15,000 bicycles will be distributed. And the aim basically is to ensure that dedicated infrastructure for non-motorized transport is actually created for five metros. The five metros identified is your city of Johannesburg, city of Tshwane, city of Cape Town, as well as Polokwane and eThekwini. Those are the five metros that have been identified. In terms of number of micro businesses to be established, the department is looking at 20 Shova Galula micro businesses to be established, which will be sustainable going forward. Okay, it's eThekwini, Polokwane. eThekwini is more of ensuring that there's a leakage with COP17, which is planned later this year. Then the next city is Polokwane, city of Johannesburg, city of Tshwane, together with city of Egurulweni. come again, ma'am? Not really, ma'am. It's for infrastructure development in relation to your non-motorized transport. In terms of the rolling stock, particularly looking at PRASA as a central point, PRASA actually pride itself by ensuring that it will invest in the program related to rolling stock and infrastructure upgrade. And this will therefore contribute to job creation. PRASA has an objective of ensuring that companies that play an active a role in creating jobs and training technicians will be given incentives. And an example of an incentive is to ensure that they may be given more coaches to operate in the year 2011, 2012, as well as 2013, 2014, and TEF. In total, the PRASA new rolling stock investment program, it is anticipated that it will cost 97 billion rands over the next 18 years. The first batch of trains expected to be delivered will be in 2014-2015 financial year. However, when we look at the estimated contribution towards job creation, which is the latest information we received, which is not captured here, is the fact that PRASA capital investment project will in the long term ensure that there's plus minus 100,000 jobs created, but in the short term there's an expected of plus minus 5,000 jobs created. The plan of PRASA is to ensure that 65% of its content should be locally based. So that's the target that PRASA has given itself. So I think it's another area that would have to be managed in terms of whether it is implemented going forward or not, because it's just a plan going forward. Sorry, ma'am? Yes, the local content target for PRASA is 65% target on all investment projects. Then the next, this slide, it talks about the partnership that the department has embarked on with IDC and TTI, given the fact that IDC has a kitty that is has a budget that has been allocated to it to ensure that there's local manufacturing in the country, particularly by the transport sector. So currently the department is engaging DTI and IDC as to how to roll out and how to basically use that money going forward. But basically the idea, though, is to make sure that buses, trucks, and minibuses are basically locally produced. In terms of for the details of the plan going forward, I think it will still be unpacked. But there's a challenge around the fact, without going through every bullet point here, there's a challenge around this area in the sense that the current government control fleet, in the sense of buses, which are subsidized by government, those are the ones which government can sort of have an idea in terms of capacity of demand in the country, and the government can therefore determine as to whether these should be produced locally or not. But government has no hold on those privately owned buses and trucks and minibuses. What government can only do is to lobby and sort buy-in from these industries so that they manufacture, they produce their fleet in the country. The issue is that before you can establish a manufacturing plant, you would have to ensure that there's enough demand, there's enough capacity, which you can get in the country. But obviously one can think of ensuring that you establish a plant, but also try and source the track and see if you can get demand from outside the country, because we're now talking about Africa as a whole, not South Africa as a whole, you know. That's basically around that slide that talks about the partnership between DOT and DTI as well as the IDC. One of the critical scope of new growth path that has been identified is the fact that the green economy would contribute towards massive job creation. Then the question was from the department, what is the role of the department? So the department firstly have realized that they have been identified, the transport sector has been identified as the second most culprit in terms of gas emissions. So be that is May, what then the department would have to do in terms of making sure that we change the status quo. But before coming to the interventions that the department is anticipating, let me indicate that the current Gauteng province has a scheme whereby the taxi industry has launched a green vehicle pilot project, which introduced flexible fuel vehicles that can run on both liquid petrol and gas and gasoline. The first phase is running approximately 70 taxis in the province, which is critical. So obviously its success we'll see as to how it then can be repeated in other provinces. What's critical to note in terms of the interventions that the department would want to put in place is the fact that one, it's in relation to COP17, which is later in the year, which is the most critical part. I'm sorry, Chairperson, for jumping around. I think I'm trying to look at the critical interventions for the members to note. The second most critical area, which is coordinated and managed by RTMC, is the fact that testing is done on 500,000 vehicles for gas emission, and therefore see what sort of mechanisms should be taken going forward. The department is working closely with DTI to ensure that there's an encouragement. We encourage local manufacturing of electric vehicles related components, and it is estimated that 160,000 direct jobs will be created in 10 years. Now we're going to focus on skills development brief on internal focus, because the request was more on the transport sector, but then the second focus will be on external focus, then give key programs now. In terms of the general overview of the transport sector, the fact that DOT has developed a skills development strategy which aims to respond to these legislative mandates, one of them, your NGP, your IPAC, Youth and Rural Development Strategy. I may indicate as well that there has been an oversight in effect that the chairperson has mentioned an issue around poverty reduction strategy. I think there is a poverty reduction strategy in the department, and it's something that we'll probably look at as well to factor it in here. And the department aims to address issues of decent work as well as job creation, and partnerships already have been formulated with high education institutions. You will see there are two major programs that the department is currently rolling out. I will touch base on those later on. In terms of internal focus, DOT, like other government departments, were asked basically to participate in HR Connect, and this program basically helped in ensuring to identify the gaps that exist in terms of scarcity of skills. And in the department, basically, 65% of the total number of staff participated in the program. And out of the program identified key strategic training priorities, which is your transport technology, freight logistics, transport economist, and so forth. But it also then helped to identify the scarcity of skills that we have in the department, which is listed there onwards. But I think maybe one would have to touch the fact that there's serious lack of non-availability of transport economists, which would then help the department in terms of its deliverance on all its strategic processes. And the other area which is of critical importance is the fact that there are problems in terms of financial economic analysts, where there's the private sector competing with government, and that creates serious scarcity in terms of attracting those kind of skills as well. And then in relation to this slide, basically what I would like to say, the department, as it has been announced in the investor conference by the DG, that the department is looking at establishing a single transport economic regulator. And we know, all of us, that the country does not have sufficient economic regulation capacity and skills. So this is one critical area that would need to be looked at, particularly in line of ensuring that we want to set up a single transport economic regulator. Well, the status internally is what has been reflected here, but I won't go through much. This slide basically shows what we have in the department and what we don't have. It goes on to these three slides. But what's important to note from this slide is the fact that the department seems to be way behind. So it seems to be way behind in relation to training of disabled people. It's a gap that the department would try and close in the next financial year. The observations that we would want to make is the fact that the skills development environment lacks accurate national labor market information. There is a lack of occupational forecasting undertaken by research agencies or government departments. Sector skills plans have huge gaps in terms of labor market information. There's misalignment between your skills plan, workplace skills plan, as well as employment equity plans, something that we need to observe. In terms of external focus, which is outside the department itself, the current population of employment that has been reported, particularly through the transport sector skills plan, is the fact that there's an overall of 4.5% employment within the rail sector, and then the road sector is the one that employs more people in the transport sector. However, what has been seen from this plan is the fact that 50% of transport employees fall within the plant and machinery as well as elementary occupations. So clearly this shows you that there's a skewedness in terms of employees employed by various institutes, companies within the transport sector. Key programs which would advance your skills development, one of those is that DOT, in collaboration with the stakeholders, is in the process of identifying the number, types, and levels of jobs. Like I've indicated earlier on, that there's a lack of appropriate information, there's a misalignment of skills plans, workplace skills plans, as well as employment equity plan. So this intervention aims to ensure that that will be aligned. Earlier on, I mentioned the fact that the department is involved in two critical programs when it comes to higher education institutions. Currently, 16 previously disadvantaged youth have been put through a four-year PRAC scholarship program, and the current investment there is just over 2 million rand. The first batch of people is expected to come back, I think, in 2 years' time from now. DOT is currently investing in sectors of development, which comprises of 13 tertiary institutions to the value of just over 9 million rand. All these institutions provide transport-related courses. So, yeah, I think we putting the money where our mouth is in terms of training and development. When it comes to basically the issue around e-learning policy, the department is aiming to put in place a policy of this nature by September this year. And in terms of BEE, which the target is purely on skills development, the Transport Sector Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Charter, which was spearheaded by the department, has set aside a 3% target of skills development to be achieved by the sector, and 50% of 3% is basically for dedicated to black women, and this target is aimed to be achieved by 2015, so we hope that the sector will basically assist in achieving this target going forward. I think when you look at this slide, two important areas which contribute to job creation, which are critical. One is your bullet number two that talks to your ship registry. I think it has been said a number of times by the minister, by the DG, deputy minister, that there's a serious need of looking at this area, and the department is currently looking at how to basically develop this area and close the gap. There's an issue around your seafarers, which can create serious job opportunities in the maritime sector, given the fact that the scope should be more on shipbuilding, coastal shipping, and these areas, the seafarers will assist going forward in terms of job opportunities. Chair, just in brief, without taking much time, what we thought of doing basically is to give you a hint as to what are those few programs which are done by few of our entities. Maybe I might not go through all of them, but I think what is more critical is to look at is the SANRAL program on skills development as well as job creation. SANRAL has set aside SANRAL has spent 132 million rands on projects related to rural access and job creation. I think there now it talks to issues of economic development in the non-developed areas, particularly in the rural area. With respect to expenditure on projects, 77% of total spend of the work to be contracted will be contracted by black SMEs. Basically, what it means is that it's like a target that has been set by SANRAL that 77% of its work conducted will be given to black SMEs. It is yet to be seen as to whether it will happen. I think it's an issue of monitoring and evaluation going forward as well. In terms of other mini projects of skills development, 37 bursaries have been awarded to external students, and 98 scholarships have been awarded as well. And a budget of 2 million rand for 2011-2012 is set aside for scholarship program. I think in relation to PRASA, I think we've spoken more about PRASA, but Chair, I think there's this information that we received yesterday in relation to SANRAL, which is important to share, and it's more on job opportunities. If I can find this copy. Sorry, Chair, for the delay. I think what SANRAL is expecting to achieve in terms of job opportunities for non-toll and toll projects is that in the year 2011-2012, they expect to create around about 65,000 jobs, and in the year 2012-2013, they expect to create around about 54,000 job opportunities, which is critical and is something that would be affected in there. Yeah. Just in conclusion, Chair, we have realized that there's serious non-coordination of programs between DOT as well as state-owned entities reporting to the department. We've also realized that there isn't a standard way of reporting by the state-owned entities to the department in relation to skills development and job creation. And what we have since then resolved to do in terms of tackling that problem is that a division will be allocated and capacity will be put in place to support that division to ensure that related will then be tackled going forward. Yeah, I don't know if Mr. Venkile would want to add. Thanks, Chair. I know, Chair, that this presentation doesn't talk more on economic development of the transport sector, which is one area that you mentioned in the background, but I think it's something that we'll think about.
Thank you very much. Before I give to members to comment on this, I want to say how I see us finding each other on this. We cannot continue to operate in a form of generalizing issues. If we move from a premise that says we are closing the gap between the underdeveloped part of South Africa and the developed part of South Africa, and we are also closing the gap between the rich and the poor. We are addressing poverty. We can't generalize, because when you generalize, you make it difficult to measure progress and impact, because you would have presented a plan that says 53 jobs, but the 53 jobs do not speak. There's no way in which I can measure, are these jobs making any contribution to poverty eradication? Or are these jobs targeting areas that are underdeveloped? Is this investment that we want to make targeting underdeveloped areas, so that we can begin to create a balance in a country that has imbalances? It is a fact we inherited a country that has imbalances. I didn't like to be born in Harding, in an area that did not have a tarred road, in an area that doesn't have, that did not have water from the tap. It wasn't my choice to be born in that area. So, when the new growth path is presented, it is presented as a national plan for economic growth and job creation. It is then direct each and every department to first ask a question that says, if we want to grow the economy of the country, do we want to continue in the same pattern that the economy of the country grew, but imbalances persisted? are not going to do things in the same way, have a growing economy that doesn't impact on poverty reduction. So when it comes to a department, it should be a very clear, specific, and straightforward presentation that says, in our assessment, these are the areas with high rate of unemployment in South Africa. But we also understand the national spatial development perspective of those areas. And we also understand the provincial economic development plan of that area. And then you zoom to a district municipality that we also understand the integrated development plan and the local economic development plan of the district municipality, because that is where coordination happens. And then the plan has to speak to the district plan, the plans in the district. When you are presenting to us, you must first give us a picture of South Africa, because South Africa is an uneven leveled country in terms of development. So that we can then see how this plan of creating jobs, of developing skills, speaks to the imbalances that exist in the country. Because if we don't do that, we shall create jobs. But jobs will not have an impact on poverty reduction, because we may create jobs in areas where there is no need, the dire need is not in those areas. Also, the plan should be able to say to us, in terms of transport, these are the scarce skills. And our plan for skills development is that we have these institutions located in these areas, and our plan is to develop these skills, and we have the capacity because we have institutions. And if we don't have institutions, your plan should be saying, for scarce skills that are needed around transport, that we do not have institutions in the country, we have negotiated with these countries, and we will be sending our people to acquire these skills for so many years. That is the kind of plan we are looking at. We are not looking at a general plan, as if the presentation needs developing ngoba thina sesithi wozani thina. When we call you to come and present to us, we are asking you to come and present to us a plan that you developed long time ago. The only thing that you are doing is you are coming to present the plan to us that is actually directing your work, your implementation process. It can't be a presentation that will await our question first, and then you develop a presentation. A presentation should be an extract of an existing plan. You are putting it in a slide form so that we can then relate to it. But in the land presenter guy doesn't tell me, I don't know about other members, doesn't tell me, Guti, before we sent you the letter, there was a plan that speaks to this. It is as if Nilani developed a presentation. Go back in a sensitive or than is or present. In our presentation, it's too general. because anga decide ukuthi azoba kuphi ama micro businesses eshova kalula. Land decide khona ukuthi where you are going to build the infrastructure. But the biggest question ngizoyibuza ukuthi why kubuildwa khona manje a city of Johannesburg bekwenziwa i-infrastructure ye-BRT. Here bekwenziwa i-infrastructure ye-BRT, kwakhiwa ama-toll gate. It's Johannesburg lapho naseTswana. The same happened in the city of Durban. Kade kune-infrastructure development kulungiselelwa u-2010. Kakithi la ngizalwa khona mina. Abantu bakhona bahamba ngenyawo 20 kilometers, 30 kilometers on foot. Then the infrastructure near bicycle near Goyaka, Kuma Metro. What problem are you addressing? Mania Goyaka infrastructure near bicycle, Kuma Metro, when people in the rural areas are still working on foot. Mina ngifuna nikhulume nge problem ukuthi. Don't say to us you are in developing an infrastructure. Tell us the problem you are addressing by developing that infrastructure in the metros. Because you mean I'm going to learn to build bicycle in Kirishwa Ubudwan, who was a teacher. He used to carry me in his bicycle. I was schooling where my brother was teaching. So he didn't have a car. He had a bicycle. Ibhayisikile sasiligibela lalihamba kwi-gravel road. Nanamhlanje ibhayisikile ehade ngilisahamba kwi-gravel road. ETekwini angikaze mina ngimbone umuntu ogibela ibhayisikile phakathi eThekwini. Kodwa eHarding ngiyabazi abantu abagibela amabhayisikile. Because isikole sikude. Isitolo sikude. Idolobha likude ne-community. Abantu basemakhaya nanamhlanje bagibela ibhayisikile, bagibela ihashi. Ayikho infrastructure. Then iplan yenu kodwa ithi niyakokwakha infrastructure yamabhayisikile kuma metro, which then means ukuthi the first world is being prioritized and the third world is left underdeveloped. Then tell us how you arrive at that. What problem are you addressing by developing a bicycle infrastructure in cities where there are toll roads that have been built costing billions and billions and billions? There is Gautrain yakhiwe infrastructure yakhona ne infrastructure ebhayisikile ya lapho kusho ukuthi you are widening the gap, you are not narrowing the gap. So people in the cities must have the bicycle infrastructure, must have the toll roads, must have high-speed trains, must have aeroplanes, must have everything. And those in the rural areas, born, they are not citizens of this country. Mabahambe ngeenyawo bona. I didn't like to go to school on foot. Ngangiba namansense. Ngangibuya esikoleni iy'nyawo zami ziqhumile zinegazi. And I don't want ama-generations alandela ngemuva kwami. I experience leyo nto mina engayi-experience when I'm sitting here making laws. So I am going to open to other members, but that is my observation that this plan that you have presented, I enjoy the problems that we are addressing and also an understanding of where such problems actually exist. If we're talking skills development, what areas of skills? And if we're talking skills development in relation to job creation, which areas have got high rates of unemployment and people that are not employable because they don't have skills? Doesn't tell me that. Even this Hamba Zonke, what you are presenting here, if I can bring him to from Ogwin as our presenter, Ogu Model. Ogu Model will be more detailed than this Hamba's one, because Ogu Model will tell you how many people will be employed, how many roads will be fixed, how many potholes will be fixed, in how many months, where the material will be produced, creating jobs at local level. That's what we are going to actually provide oversight on. Because even now we allocations, municipalities are allocated 35 million. Out of this Hamba fund, municipalities are allocated 35 million. The pilot project that we did in Ogu has got 6 local municipalities. We did a few roads in the Hibiscus Coast, and the pilot project cost us 5 million. And that 5 million was only for 3 months. And we managed to close 5,283 potholes. I was responsible for developing that place. So, ngiyazi into engikhuluma ngayo. Ngiyazi ukuthi kwaqashwa abantu abangaki, ngiyazi ukuthi bangaki ababesefactory, ngiyazi ukuthi bangaki ababevala ama-potholes, ngiyazi ukuthi bangaki ababe-provide, ababelokuza, ababe-control i-traffic, belokuza amandla. Animenshini ngisho ukuthi imaphi ama-skills azo-provide labantu labakhulunywa njengabantu abazoqashwa ukuthi bawu-22,278. There is no mention of skills, ukuthi bayo trainer maphi ama-skills. The model that we presented, Yasogwe, that I personally was part of development, yayisho ukuthi bazotrainwa kumaphi ama-skills, kuthatha isikhathi esingakanani ukuthi batrain, bayosebenza isikhathi esingakanani. So le ayisho le. Even nalapha la ni-presenta khona the maritime. Nikhuluma ngama seafarers, but you are not even mentioning ukuthi there is only one vessel. Nale vessel futhi ibolekiwe. Siyayikhokhela 48 million rand a year. If mhlambe the time siqala si hirisha that vessel simultaneously, we were building our own vessel, ngabe sibeke manje, we would be nearing a period where we would be having, by that, such and such a time, we exit from a hired vessel go 48 million. Kithina, it is of pain, ukuthi there is one child who was placed in a foreign ship and then died under mysterious conditions. Ngabe kungcono ukuthi kuthiwa kwakuyi-fleet yethu, ngabe siyawazi kahle ama conditions that led to that. So nje ngicela ukukhuluma nabantu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I concur with the Chairperson's sentiments, given the fact that I'm also from the rural areas. And most of us in this committee, I think we are from rural areas. So we know the hardships that our people are facing down there. So I would appreciate it if these manufacturing plants were targeted to be in the rural areas, because that is where hardships is. That is where there is no jobs, there are no jobs. That is where our people are suffering on a daily basis. So what I can say, Chairperson, is that I was there when they presented this presentation in the investor conference. I was there, and I said to Mangele that we'll deal with them in the portfolio committee, because what is being presented here doesn't talk anything about the rural areas. It means, or it seems as if we are still following the apartheid patterns that everything that is good will happen in the searches. So it's time we change from that direction. We take this development to the rural areas where there's much, where there are, they are needed. Chairperson, about this issue of skills development within the transport sector, yes, that one I can say I applaud them, but you need also to check which skills do you want to develop in the country. The scarce skills, that is what we need to develop. And these things must be taken down to the provinces and also to the municipalities. I used to work for the Department of Transport. There were these bazaars, they said you can study for transport to be a transport economist. But when we try to do that, they discourage us by telling us there is no budget for this. So we couldn't go on. So I'm happy to hear that there is budget for that, but let's prioritize which skills are we looking at. Here we are talking about people living in the farms and learners walking more than 20 kilometers per day to school, per foot. So these shovagalulas mustn't be distributed in the cities. People and learners in the cities doesn't have a problem with transport. They have different kinds of transport. They have their choice, the choice to choose which transport they want to use. But in the rural areas, there is none. You cannot take a taxi to school. You don't have money to pay for that taxi. There is no bus that will take you to school. Only the buses that the scholar transport buses that are there, but not in all areas, in some areas. So our plea to the department is that let's focus this thing, especially to the rural areas, because that's where the pain is. I'm one of the people who have a constituent office surrounded by 45 farms. The other day, Chairperson, I nearly cried. On my way to the constituent office, I saw this boy. I'm sure he's 7 years old. Doesn't have shoes, and he's walking to school. And the school is far away from where he stays. Doesn't have anything. We hear that the department supplied this bicycle Chairperson in the past. But I don't understand if I'm not sure if this bicycle reached the targeted people on the ground. In my area, I even asked Chairperson last year, there were these bicycles which were supplied to the, which was delivered to the tribal authority. They said it's from the Department of Transport. And those bicycles were sold for 150 each. And in my understanding, I thought those bicycles were meant for learners to use on their way to school. So please, focus these manufacturing plants of these shovagalulas to the rural areas. The cities doesn't need this. They have many choices of transport. Thank you, Chair.
I apologize, Honorable Members. I have noted you. But Honorable Faro has got a meeting, and that's at 11:30, and I am going to prioritize him so that he can say what he wants to say and then leave.
Thank you very much, Chair. I can concur with you what you said here, because the first thing that came to my mind when I looked at this document is that, you know, what does it talk to in terms of macro plan? Because at the end of the day, one has to now start prioritizing where, first of all, the jobs are. Now, we have a very extensive rural development program which effectively is trying to take the jobs to the rural community, as opposed to trying to bring everybody into the urban area. And that in itself has its you know, challenges. But what I'd like to say is this, as an engineer, is that, you know, our infrastructure on our main road networks, which is undertaken by SANRAL, is being reasonably well kept. The new access to finance, which is, you know, not enough, but $22 billion over 3 years on that Tamla Zonke thing, my mind of thinking should be challenged down where it should be going, into the rural areas, because that's where we've got to now bring everything up to some sort of a par. Now, we have in this committee been looking at various sort of means of trying to see how we can improve rural infrastructure to link it into the main networks of both, not only road, but rail. We have branch lines, for instance, in railways, which are sitting redundant in rural areas, which I don't even have a mention here. And if we're going to be serious about what we're trying to do in ensuring that transport is the backbone of this economy, which it is, then we've got to make sure that we maintain what we've got and certainly build up where we don't. And that means, you know, a vast investment into those areas to create jobs, because just roads itself, and I think you quite rightly put your finger on that pulse, is that there is a 59% opportunity for job creation out of just roads and that type of network than any of the other stuff. The others are all little tiny ones that are spin-offs that we could add value to. For instance, like in the maritime industry, you know, we have infrastructure in this country. And what makes me quite perturbed is the fact that we import, you know, and there's no benefication. There were 7, for instance, that I'm aware of, local coach building manufacturers in this country that could, in the past, build all the railway rolling stock you wanted. Now we're sitting with a situation where we have to bring stuff in, and Pras is telling us, well, they're going to try and see if they can get a 65% local content in it. It should be 100%, really, in due respect, other than certain components, maybe, which we would have to try and have to import. But that's the sort of focus that we'd be looking at, trying to create jobs in our own country first. So I talk about that, and I raised it at the investment conference. I might have done it controversially at the time, and I was told it's not a workshop of policy. But unless your policy is right... There's no ways that you're going to, because investments are overseas. They're going to come in here, and when they come in here, they want to bring with it their own expertise, number one. And secondly, their own components. So it's putting you at a very difficult disadvantage in trying to look at how we can try and create jobs within the country. And it's got to be done on the basis of the right mix and ensuring that we try and start at home. Charity begins at home. So I just wanted to mention that, and I don't think it's far off what the chairperson is saying about trying to see that we focus our attention here. Where are the jobs or the unemployment, and where do we need to start in terms of a priority in getting the thing right versus roads and rail? Now, the whole aspect of the green economy opens up many, many opportunities, and I'll pick up on this by the fact that, you know, we go as portfolio committees to go and see other countries. When we went to the South American trip to Bogota, when the BRTs were being thought about and all the public transport initiatives were looked at, we never saw there a bus that operated other than on gas. Now, just to do that exercise in terms of the conversion from the present one to the present system would create thousands of jobs. Believe me, because it could be done by small entrepreneurs and, you know, in their backyards for taxis and for buses. And that could be the starting point. And the catalyst that we would like to see coming out of the Department of Transport is say, well, let's regulate for that over a period of 3 years, we convert these type of buses, which are the biggest emitters of pollution and gases into the atmosphere than anything. Particular diesel, and try and see whether there's a way of trying to slowly phase in a conversion, issue of that petrol to petroleum to gas. And last but not least, I think the training issues need to be seriously looked at. We have institutions here which need to have capacity added to them in terms of skill training. I'm not talking question about having to go into the aspects of looking at retraining or recreating institutions that would have to deal with certain skills. But for instance, I find it strange that we can put two million into, unless it's a grant, into countries like Prague, where possibly we could teach them a thing or two about, you know, about certain engineering or whatever practices those people are going for, unless it's a grant, unless Prague is saying to us, we will take your disadvantaged community over there and train them mahala, you know, very nice. But when we spend 2 million, we could put that 2 million into training here and maybe bringing those people's skills over here to try and exchange that way. You know, I'm just thinking of ways of skinning the cat. It seems an expensive way, and one would have to convince me that we don't have the right faculties here to deal with our skills in this country by having to send people over. It's a very nice experience, and it's nice to see how people do things in a different country in a different way, but there's no reason why those skills can't be transferred back, you know, without having to send 17 students overseas. So I just ask those sort of questions. So, you know, the bottom line is this, that, you know, we need to look at going back to the drawing table and putting priorities down, you know, just a map up there to show me that, look, these areas don't have a decent road. And let's start saying, well, that's the priority, because how is the provincial governments now going to hand out the Hambazonke money? On what basis? They're going to have to say, in my area in the Eastern Cape, we know that in this road from Port Beaufort to here or there is in such a bad condition that it's just about inaccessible, and we're going to have to give money there as a priority. And then secondly, we'll look at the next and the next. And that classification is there. We have seen it at this portfolio committee. Get the classification in front of us so we can say, well, that's where the priorities are. That's where we need to put tar roads in. That's where we need to go and upgrade existing district roads, et cetera, et cetera. And that, I'm sure, will aid and assist those provinces in terms of how they allocate that $22 million over the next 3 years. I think, Chair, I could go on, but I agree with you. There's a lot of opportunity. The maritime industry, shipbuilding, we hardly touched on that. And in the aviation industry, for instance, you know, SAA, which we don't have a handle on, and I find it very difficult to try and relate aviation travel to transport per se, because it's sitting in another ministry, as is freight rail, which should be all part and parcel of us. And you do touch on that reality, is the fact that they are sending all their current fleets of Boeings to China to do the services, because they say it's cheaper to fly it over there to do it there than to do it where they used to do it at home. And I, as a portfolio committee over the years, have been to that facility in Johannesburg where they used to do the major services for all our aircraft here. They're not doing it anymore. Now we need to look at those issues and say, well, why, you know. So, Chair, I'm going to leave it there. I'm sorry I have to leave. I'd like to have been part of this debate. It's a very important one, because this is where we're going to in this country. We don't get the jobs, we can't fulfill those needs of those jobs, we're going to run into serious problems. And transport, believe me, in every respect, has got the highest opportunity for us to do those job creations. Just simply maintenance of roads and things like that. It's just things.
The point is this, Honourable, what you have touched on is that our aeroplane to try for services, it looks like we have internalized this thing of being a consumer, because when we went to China for a study tour, we were told that as part of their plan for economic development in China, they sent people to three countries that were good in transportation. That was Germany, Japan, and France. So while they were building their institutions to train those people, they at the same time sent people to go and learn. Some came back as
professors in the institutions that they were building, and others came back as engineers in the state-owned enterprises. If we are sending our aeroplanes to China for services, there should be people that are also in China from South Africa that are learning the skill if the problem is the skill. We can't be sending our flight because it is cheaper to service in China when we have a challenge in this country of job creation. It can't be correct. It can't be correct because it then means that everything that we do will be determined by the price, not by the needs of the country. So if all the decisions that we are taking are influenced by how much it costs, then this country will never develop. That is what I wanted to say. Honorable Glenn, yes, Ula Delayan.
Thanks, Chaperson. Now let's welcome the input, Chair, and secondly, agree with you that possibly we needed an input before this one that indicated to us the contribution to growth, new growth path, and the industrial policy action plan. You know, in much more details, looking at your contribution to these two programs with this identified programs from yourselves, indicating where those programs are going to be and the budget for those programs. For instance, in Siamba Sonke, we are not clear as we are sitting here where these programs are going to be implemented in the country, and that we agree that yes, indeed, this is where the budget for this year, this financial year, this is where the budget must be. This is where the roads must be for Siamba Sonke. It doesn't seem to me that we know, and it's easy for us to agree with you that yes, continue, go on with that program for Siamba Sonke. I can say the same, Chair, with Shova Galula. How is it going to be implemented? Where? You know, the rolling stock, all of it. We can't, you know, talk to those plans, and we agree with the implementation of those plans. And it seems to me, Chair, you know, the input today lacks to show us where and how the program is going to be implemented, and whether we agree with, you know, the implementation plan. That's the first thing. The second thing, Chair, is the skills that are going to be developed in each of these areas. And I think, Chair, you have correctly pointed out that where the skills are going to be developed, do we have the infrastructure? And if we don't have the infrastructure, what is it that we are doing? And do we indeed agree as, you know, as all of us sitting here, that no, this is the correct direction of developing the skills that are not there, and this is the areas where those skills should be developed, and these are the institutions that we must, as a country, go and develop the skills in those institutions. The last thing, Chair, is on job creation. You know, we must say this is the plan for job creation, and this is how it is going to be implemented, and these are the areas where it is going to happen. And all of this, Chair, you know, must have time frames for Shopa Sonke, time frames for, you know, all of this. We must be able to speak to it. We must be able to say, yes, indeed, by the end of the year, the money that we have budgeted will be correctly used in the correct areas, and we agree with it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks from the department for the presentation. Chairperson, you have said it all. You have said it all, but I really want to know from the department, Chairperson, what informed you to do this thing of Shova Kalula. My concern is about those bicycles. What informed you to do this thing? Maybe there is something that we don't know as the members. I don't want to repeat what other members have said, but when we were busy developing this document, there was nothing that cropped up from your minds about the rural area. Chairperson, to me, they are not here to resolve any problem. Instead, they are here to cause a problem. You are here to cause serious problems. We are not here for the cities only. There are those previously disadvantaged people from the Bulus. But when you are developing this document, you know, you don't even think about those people. It's like you are taking the coal to the Newcastle. Chairperson, if I was the chairperson of this committee, I was going to say, I am not accepting this. This is not a job creation. The poor of the poorest are there. Crab cheeks to their children with barefoot, no shoes, nothing. You are taking the bicycles to the cities. For Ndoni, for what good reason? Where is job creation when you are taking, you are creating jobs in the cities, whereas we want you to do the job creation in the rural areas? We are not saying that that's because we are coming from the rural areas, but to me, you don't care for those who were previously disadvantaged. You do care for those who are rich. Those who are poor, they must stay poor forever. And also their generation must be like that forever. You know, Chairperson touched me a lot when she said she was schooling with her brother with the bicycle. When was that? 1959, just imagine. Until today, there is no development. There are no bicycles. We are not talking about her place. You must not misinterpret her. It was just an example. Like my place from Engobo, whoa, it's a dry, deep, dark, rural Bundus. I don't know how can I name Engobo from Eastern Cape, where I come from. We see these things from TVs. We know we're going to die. Those things are not going to be there. We're going to die, maybe. Our generation also is going to die. Then I'm going to do it. Singazuama to Talekoli, Nagabo Tepe, Nagabo Pisong, as long as Guazuamati. Snala believe you must also share among my own code. Nikube again in a gate department, Ingati, Aningo band to walk with Chigilan, Abantu Masanchona, the Funuku Tet and also when he said I listened. Nichigilan running Abantu Masanchona go, and the Guazu spring is this. Send it to the end and a khona le roots is in Guanina, Bandu benze into it. Intoni ukuthi ibulala kangaka sihleli kuthiwa yintoni ngabantu aba sizoba representa apha. What are they saying when we are busy sitting here discussing cities only? I know it's too much, man. Natasha, I don't accept this, man. This is not a job creation. Thank you.
This is not a joke, but the chairperson, my worry is that when I come to this parliament and then I get the portfolio committee of transport, I was so happy. The main thing is that we have talked a lot. If they can say, Chairperson, we are going to make a different thing except this, they would be okay. My main worry is that, you know, Moloto Road, I will talk about Moloto Road every time, where there is only one transport, a Patco bus. Only a Patco bus. And those people, they so love bicycles. Amandebele by a candy bicycle. And then, when I look this the report, there's no city like Mpumalanga. They will provide them with the bicycles. When we are saying working together, we can make a good community. They must be happy. It doesn't mean like that. Because if I take this presentation, maybe I go to Mpumalanga and we discuss with this, they will fight with their members of the parliament who come from Mpumalanga and say, what are you doing there? Because there's no way we are talking about Mpumalanga. We just, maybe there is no a city in Mpumalanga. Only Gauteng and KZN, there is a city. Maybe the way the chairperson is saying, let's go back to the DG and draft the new one. There is an old lady here, Mangele. Maybe she'll be well. If you come with something different talking about the rural area. The problem is that if somebody is not feeling well, you can't take that person to the hospital. Because there is no transport that can go to the mountain and take, and even the ambulance, you can't say there is no ambulance in the rural area. There is a problem for which. Thank you for that. Maybe there will be changes. Let's not fight.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just ask a few questions to the presenters, thanks very much for the presentation. The first is, and I apologize if a question has been asked, I did miss some out on some of the questions that are being posed. So if they are repeated, then please excuse me. The first is with regard to the establishment of this local bicycle manufacturing plant. How do you envisage it? Is it going to be run by the department, or is it going to be a private-public partnership, or is it going to be run by a private enterprise and so forth, because either way it would still create jobs, but it's just we don't want just to create jobs and then the production be inefficient and not to produce the product. Then have you given thought, one of the members mentioned earlier, thought of the fact that these bicycles destined for the scholars are end up not being given to the scholars, either get sold or someone else uses them and so forth. So is there a way, I don't have an answer, so I'm just wondering, to ensure that the people for whom these bikes are intended actually get it? It's a very difficult one to control. Then you also talk about the $97 billion over the next 18 years, the new running stock program for PRASA. Can you just unpack us a little bit more there? Because I know about the program. I know over 18 years it's about carriages and so forth. But are these goods being manufactured externally in China, for example, or Germany or whatever, and then being shipped in? Or is there a measure of some kind of contribution in South Africa where local labor needs to be used as part of this project? And then also the you speak here about the taxi industry launching a green vehicle pilot project. I'm just trying to understand how that, I mean, it's a good thing, but I'm just trying to understand how would that contribute to job creation, because I'm just trying to understand how that is, because this is the presentation is aimed at that. And then you also talk about the DTI support by the department to work on the appropriate support to encourage local manufacturing of this electric car, which I've read about as well. And it says an estimated 160,000 direct jobs are expected. And, you know, what kind of expertise are we talking about? Do we have the expertise that is required? And has some kind of feasibility been done to ensure that this product, in other words, this vehicle, is actually going to be successful and people would actually use it? Because obviously if it's not going to be used, then those jobs aren't sustainable in the long term. And then, Chair, I think I have just one more later on in the presentation, and that is, you mentioned 16 previously disadvantaged youths have been sent to a scholar to a scholar program in the Czech Republic. What kind of scholarships are they? What are the skills that these young people will be attaining and so forth? And how will we ensure that we get benefit from their expertise once they're back? And then you also mentioned about the department supporting centers of development in the 13 tertiary institutions. If you could just unpack that a little bit more. If you can tell us a little bit more there as well. And then lastly is you talk about SAMHSA and that we require 36,000 seafarers. First of all, is this I presume this is some kind of calculation that's been done scientifically. And secondly, what is being done to assist and make sure that we get these seafarers and they're properly trained and supported and then contribute to the country? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to add on what I said earlier, that the CRDP, the Comprehensive Rural Development Plan, is not for the Department of Rural Development only. It's for all departments to come together to develop those areas. So we mustn't make mistake on that issue that it's only for the Department of Rural Development only. So one other thing, by developing the rural areas, bringing the infrastructure and all this bicycle manufacturing plants, will create more jobs. And this might assist also in curbing the mushrooming of these informal settlements in the cities. And also will assist in fighting the HIV and AIDS. Because when people move from one area to the next, then some of them yeah, will stay in those areas because they can't find job. They'll stay in the informal settlements and they'll have new partners and they'll be infected with this HIV and AIDS. But we need to bring all this to mind when we do something so that we can understand what these things, these negative things affect our people in the rural areas. Thank you.
Nina, before you respond, I just want to make, because I take in our interactions also as an opportunity to learn from each other. When you make presentations, I learn from you. My training background, Nina, is not transport. ANU is transport, you have got transport. Now, the comments I am going to be making are more about making us to be at the same level in terms of the approach. Your training background is transport means a little bit. Mina, I'm a politician, but also I represent people, but also I also have my own training background. I'm trained in community development. So everything that I look at the thing from a perspective that says, are we equal as communities? And if not, who are the most affected people and what are the issues that are affecting them? That is how my mind works all the time, because I'm a politician. A politician is a change agent, an agent of change. A politician is a public representative and a person who wants to effect change. Now, my understanding is that there is something called an intergovernmental relations framework, which enables a government to interact horizontally and vertically in addressing our problems, in responding to the problems that exist. That instrument was created to deal with the issue of working in silos. The intergovernmental relations framework is enabling a government department to look at itself as a limb of a boat, not a body on its own, the department, a government department. The intergovernmental relations framework is a tool that was put in place to assist government departments to move away from a culture of working in silos. And if I was in a training session, training community people, laymen and women, I was going to say it is a tool that enables government department to see itself as part of a body, either an arm or a head or a neck, and the
the head doesn't do anything on its own. It needs to be attached to the neck. And the neck needs the chest and the back and the shoulder. Now, in fact, a definition of transport, it is the heartbeat for social and economic development. You provide transport in an underdeveloped area, you attract investment. You provide transport services in a developed and underdeveloped area, you address the social needs of the community. That's why it is called it the heartbeat. Now, I'm going now to talk about transport as part of the body government. In government, there is a structure where everything happens that we're talking about transport, happens at local government level. Now, a question that I want to ask is around the identified scarce and critical skills. Because if we are moving from a premise that says our integrated transport plan seeks to facilitate a situation where the road connects to the rail infrastructure. The road infrastructure connects to the rail infrastructure. Both the road infrastructure and the rail infrastructure connect to the airport. Both the rail infrastructure and the road infrastructure connect to the port. Those things don't happen here. That connection happens at a municipality. EOR Tambo is a Gruleng municipality. The OR Tambo airport is it is at a Gruleng. The rail link to OR Tambo is from Tswane municipality and Johannesburg Metro. That is the rail link. The road link is from all the townships, some that belong to Tswane, others that belong to Ekurhuleni, and others that belong to Johannesburg. Now, if we think of ourselves as part of a body, the Department of Transport, we should be aware of the fact that there is lack of capacity in some municipalities in terms of the skills that are required for those municipalities to be able to plan and design integrated transport infrastructure. Now, the identified skills. When I was in Ogu District Municipality, I was responsible for planning, for infrastructure development, and for economic development. When it came to us having to then relate to infrastructural planning, infrastructure development planning, we realized that we did not have the capacity. And we went to DBSA to sort, to get AMA skills, AMA engineers funded by DBSA. If we are talking the development of the country, we understand the local transport as the heartbeat for economic development and social development. In our plan for skills development, we should be thinking of the local municipalities, because some of the roads, not some, most of the roads, they connect there. And it's only the metros that have got qualified engineers and town planners. In number, it's also informed by the fact that there are so many municipalities that are going to be part of the transport infrastructural development plan, and then the skills needs assessment that we have done as the Department of Transport, because the Department of Transport at national level is responsible for coordination, and it is empowered by the intergovernmental relations framework to go to the municipality and assess the skills level, because there is that tool that enables. So le plan le aika khulumi nalokho. Ngiyizwa le nto esisho. Mina I don't want to fight with you and speak as if I am attacking you, because we are learning from each other. You must, I want to give you an opportunity of understanding how we think and what are the issues that you should be responding to, and also use the same opportunity to learn from you. So I am not going to fight you. I am going to find solutions to the problems that we seek to address together with you. I'm going to explain things in such a way that you come out of here understanding how we think, and also when you come out, we must also be understanding how you think, because we took a resolution in this committee that we will work together with you. And the problems of this country are problems that are our challenges, and we are here not as us and them, as one team that seeks to find better solutions for the problems that you are addressing. And for us to be able to do that, we then need to explain the nature of the problem and the extent of the problem, so that we empower you to go back and develop a plan that speaks to the problem. I'm not going to fight with you. You are part of us, and also you are dealing with the problems that were never your creation. So I'm not going to fight with you. I am going to critique the plan and shape the plan with you, so that at the end of the day, it is our plan. The only difference is that Tina, we give a political input and a political analysis to the plan. You are the official. You go and put the technical aspect on the plan. So I will always protect you. I will not allow my members to attack you for any reason, because we are not, you find yourself in that situation because of the past
that we are dealing with, the uneven levels of development that we are dealing with were not created by you. And our role, Tinala, is to make you understand the nature of the problem that we are addressing and the extent of the problem that we are addressing. All I am saying, Minala, okay, there are things that are missing in this plan. And the plan doesn't speak to the needs and the challenges on that ground. And we are asking you to go back and take all the things that we have raised and reshape the plan. We will call you back. I want to clear. Ama members lawa adiniwe adine ngoba asuka le ayasha adinwe kakhulu futhi manje ngoba kadenze door to door afike abuzwa ngale zinto ezinayo kodwa ngizobuye ngikhulume nawe mangabe senihambeni ukuthi akanganithethisi because akukho lutho esizoluthola mangabe sithethisayo akanganithethisi akenze i-contribution ezokwenza u-understand ukuthi why we are saying this is not the right plan. We must make you understand ukuthi why you are saying it is not the right plan. Like we have explained in indaba ye bicycle track in a metro ukuthi you are over developing the people in the metros and leaving the people in the rural areas underdeveloped. So go and change that. Angeke ngishukini silahlele njani cha. We come from the same. Futhi uma ngisho kanjalo, I am not saying the Freetas doesn't come from there. The Freetas is here to represent people of South Africa. And he is also part of the plan because we provide AMA services to all the people of South Africa, those that are in the developed areas and those that are in the underdeveloped areas, because we want a balance. That's what we want. So I am now giving you an opportunity to respond. And in your response, Mina, ngifuna ninga entertain indaba yokuthethiswa kwenu ingoba nje niyinkani. Ni entertain nina indaba yoku relate how does the plan that you have presented relate to the problem that we have presented. Kunokwenzeka ukuthi there is a hidden information in this document that we can't see because we all have blind spots. People have blind spots. And it is your opportunity to actually make us see that blind spot. And if there is no hidden information, it is a blind spot on you that before you came here, you did not see the things the way we see them. Then, as a result of that, you did not respond to those things in putting the blame. Say so.
Thanks, Jefferson. Thanks, members. I think I must start by saying we welcome the critique and the guidance, because as you correctly putting it, also it's also a learning curve from us. And the critique is also quite helpful in the sense that indeed it does happen at times that we understand differently, but it's no excuse not to pick up the phone and call the office of the chair to understand when there's misunderstanding. I want to start with the issue relating to skills development and training, because I think all the members raised that issue. It's unfortunately where we are in the process of finalizing a revised skills development plan for the department. Coincidentally, I had a meeting with the team yesterday because of the new transition, which is actually in the strategic plan of, as the chair was talking about, because we're talking about implementation coordination. Now, we have said that we need to develop a skills development plan that responds to this new mandate, that cuts across, that moves away from that inward-looking policy-focusing department to implementation coordination. And unfortunately, we have not presented a table that at EXCO, which is one of the things that we will also share with you. One of the critical issues in that plan, which would also relate to the issues I want to talk about the PRAC students as well, is that we have taken a very strong view that the skills development, the skills audit, must look at the sector, what is it that the country needs, the approach we take, because now we're saying, let's look at the impact we want to make in the country and what is it that the industry needs. If we're talking about rolling out of Samba Songa countrywide, where are the gaps in relation to that area? We talk about municipalities. Again, I'm glad the chair raised the issue about the intergovernmental framework. The minister is in the process. We're in the process of finalising a delivery agreement with the provinces and municipalities, which is enabling in terms of that piece of legislation that will allow all of us to respond to a single agenda. One of the challenges that we raised, because we had asked the question to our teams, why is it that even the interns that we're talking about, we can't place interns in municipalities, in provinces, in driver's license testing centers, and do a job rotation as part of the skilling? Because part of the challenge with the interns, and we take an intern, they sit and do a desk job for 6 months, and when they leave, they are not the kind of skill that they have. You could not really equate that to a proper experience. And we're saying one of the things that must come out in the strategy, which has now become urgent, is one, the issue of job rotation, is the issue of placing interns right across spheres of government. One of the issues that have also come up in relation to Samba Songa is the issue of the portal program. We have put together a call center nationally for the whole country. But the question that we're grappling with, which again talks to the skills issue, what happens when I receive a call from Harding to say there's a pothole here, and the municipality says, I don't have capacity? We should be able, as part of that program, to assist and work together with that municipality to build that capacity such that intervention must leave permanent capacity there for that municipality to be able to respond. Because that, in the end, when we talk about these billions, they must be able to not only to maintain those roads, but also to build capacity to be able to respond to the kind of challenges. In the sector, we've committed that across the country, by 2014, it must take no longer than 48 hours to close a pothole anywhere in the country, whether it's a municipal road or a provincial road. It must not just be about Sandrand. Such a part of the ingredients or things that we are putting this melting pot with the skills development are those responses. As the members quite correctly pointed out, that we must not neglect the building of the capacity of the municipalities in a sustainable way, because we also have an obligation to work with the municipalities. I think secondly, also in relation to the various programs, scholarship programs that we have. In fact, the PRAC program was actually a grant share with those 16 students that are in the Czech Republic. And one of the interesting challenges that we're dealing with is that we need to keep them occupied during holidays in terms of... And in fact, yesterday we agreed that we must begin to engage with municipalities and provinces. So when they come for holidays, they must go and get exposure and experience there. And we must also begin to utilize and mass the issue. The skills development thing is also about how to create a cadership of young people who are ready for the job market. And we have a problem that has been raised in the past in different forums, where these young learners, even in institutions of learning, they can't complete their studies because they can't find places workplaces where they can do the practical work. We have a meeting that we continue all the centers of development. There are a number of universities across the country who have been funding as a department. We call them centers of development. And they specialize in different areas of transport. And we realize that now our requirements, we need to find a way that there is synergy between what they produce and also what happened to those young people when they complete their studies, because it's one thing to pay for someone to have an engineering degree, and the next thing, once they graduate, you can't even play, you can't even place them, you leave them to their own devices. So therefore we're saying our intervention must be about a total life cycle management of that entire process from the time you fund that learner when they get into that transport program to the point where you are able to place them when they leave. Part of that chair is also partnerships with the private sector, which I think we have not explored sufficiently in relation to placing these learners. We also have a program that has recently been accredited by the South African Qualifications Authority, which we're going to be piloting from next year on a select number of FET colleges. It's a transport-specific qualification, which we are developing the curriculum ourselves to ensure that there is an alignment between what these students learn in these institutions and with the skills that you require when they come out of those. So it will be piloted in a select number of FET colleges as part of the response, also of utilizing FET colleges as hubs of developing these skills, and not only focus on universities as we have been doing with the centers of development. The other area, in relation to Shova Galula, I think one of the things that I'm missing in the presentation, we accept the critique about the presentation, is that Shova Galula is an exclusive bias towards rural and peri-urban areas. It has no focus on metros, because the rollout of that entire program with the 22 billion over the next 3 years, the emphasis is particularly the rural and peri-urban, with a strong emphasis on labor-intensive methods of maintaining and upgrading of roads, which also includes your portal program and your portal program, among other things, in your kind of peri-urban or what we refer to as rural towns, and also the rural areas. And again, in relation to Shova Galula, indeed, I think it's quite helpful that the input of the members will take that into account in relation to where do you locate this manufacturing facility. I think the question that has been asked relates to firstly, what is the intention there? Does government want to go and build a factory? Should it be? We are looking at a public-private partnership, because the reality is that there is a demand, there is a need in the country. And therefore, as government, we want to encourage also the partners with the private sector in terms of building that kind of facility to produce the bicycles. And indeed, it is our intention as well to look at how to create a rural bias in relation to where you locate even that facility. But the process where it's at chair at the moment is that we still have to engage a transaction advisor to do a feasibility study, because if we have to go the route of a public-private partnership, we have to follow those sort of processes. So the intention is to undertake that exercise, but with the ultimate goal that we want to put in this facility, and among other things, which is one of the comments and counsel that we've received even in the past from members of this committee, was the issue that as a department we need to look very carefully, one, into the issue around the maintenance of these bicycles, and also what happens, because it's one thing to give a child a bicycle, and the next thing, when something breaks, there's not even a facility close by where that can even fix that bicycle. But as part of our monitoring and evaluation system, which is part of our PMU that we're setting up, we're not only looking at monitoring, because the PMU is not only going to be monitoring what the department, what the provinces and municipalities are doing in relation to the strategy, but we'll also look at the specific outcomes of these detailed interventions. Like these bicycles, where do they go? Do they end up where they're supposed to be going? Because this is also linked to the age's new approach where they require evidence. If you say you've distributed 500 bicycles, you must be able to demonstrate evidence, show evidence that you did indeed deliver 500 bicycles to those people who should be receiving those bicycles, rather than leaving them with a tribal authority we in the end end up doing something else with those bicycles. So we also have put in place a framework that will enable us and the provinces and all our entities to ensure that they provide evidence in anything that they say they've done, that is evidence that is verifiable, that we can go back, particularly on the core service delivery areas. Not just I'm talking about paper pushing activities, but those hardcore delivery areas that members are expected to account on when they interact with their constituencies. One is also there was a question in relation to PRASA. The process here in relation to the rolling stock program of PRASA, we had appointed a transaction advisor. I think they are now at the tail end of the first phase of the process, where now they are putting together they are finalizing the feasibility study in relation to the rolling stock program. No decision has been taken yet in relation to where those trains are going to be sourced, whether they are going to come from China or elsewhere. The feasibility study now is almost complete, which will then enable them to get to the next phase, which will be the tendering phase, where a public tender will go out in relation to the sourcing of the rolling stock. And again, Chair, I think there was a question in relation to
another input that relates to monitoring and evaluation, and also linking it what we do as the Department of Transport to social development. At face value, we can say that the social development contribution that we make is that of enabling people to move from point A to B and have access to facilities and services that they need through transport services. But another social development that we should also begin to speak to is that what are the social problems that are facing our communities? One of them is unemployment. Unemployable, because there's a difference between unemployment. Unemployment is a person who has a skill but who can't find a job. Unemployable is a person who would not be employed even if there was a job, because doesn't have the skills that are required. Then that leads to poverty. Both unemployment and unemployability leads to poverty. Then, because of that, we have a consequence that has led to a government to intervene and have a category in our society that is called indigent households, people that would be provided with services and not be expected to pay for those services. They are dependent to the government. And our responsibility is to take them out of that level so that they can become self-reliant. Another category is a category of social grant dependent category. A person who has given birth to a child but can't support the child. Again, the government intervene and provide the child with the child support grant. Another category that has emerged in our society, a child-headed family because of HIV and AIDS. Both parents die, and then a 12-year-old becomes a parent to the younger one. So our job creation plan has to speak to that in terms of the target. It can't be we will open opportunities for jobs without being selective to who are the target market for job opportunities that we shall create. Who are the people that we will start with when we provide these jobs? Then there are also women-headed families, but women that also are unemployable. They are a part of the society. They are also first offenders, people that are first offenders but have committed very minor crimes. That could be targeted as part of a rehabilitation process so that we reclaim them from the criminal element. Troubled children that are not in jail, they have not gone to jail, but they are involved in drug and substance abuse. So if we then understand those social problems in our society, it would be easy for us to say we are taking a bicycle manufacturing plant to an area that has got many young people that are absorbed by drug and substance abuse, because it is a form of reclaiming them from that. And that bicycle manufacturing plant would not only manufacture bicycle, but there will also be an additional service that will come to that factory that comes from another sister department that addresses the issue of drug and substance abuse, because you are addressing social problems. That is what the intergovernmental relations framework policy seeks to do. And that is what we are called to respond to the problem, because by just creating jobs without identifying the most vulnerable, then we will have a recruitment criteria that does not speak to the social problems that are there in our society. That is what we are saying when we say, so that when we then measure, we measure both the progress. Progress is when we shall be looking at the task that we set for ourselves. How much ground have we covered in terms of progress? Then the impact would be, to what extent has our program assisted us to reclaim the first offenders? They are no longer involved in crime. To assist the child-headed families to have an income, to take out the family that is in the indigent register and make it self-reliant. Those are the social problems we're talking about. So it can't just be a job creation, 53,000 people, and we don't know where those people shall come from. And what informs us to go and tell the investor that in this area, we have drug addicts. And through this century, we want to address that issue. In this area, we have child-headed families, because it is an area that was highly affected by HIV and AIDS, and both parents of the children died. That is why we are asking and appealing to you that go in and invest in that area so that you can create employment and give hope to a hopeless. Then the government will be eased from a burden of providing social grants and social services, and we shall then have enabled the community to look after itself instead of government continuing to feed that community. That is what we are asking you to do.
Thanks, Chair. I'll also try to summarize briefly what is the instruction. I think based on the comments from the members, partly because of the lack of information, I think it's important for us to provide the members with detailed implementation job strategies that Chair is alluding to that demonstrate that social impact. What are the outcomes in relation to those, and what are the target communities on each of our, whether we're talking Sovakalula, we're talking Zamba Sonke, we're talking the driver's license. So we must put together a plan which we'll share with the committee on the job strategy.
Don't take a factory to Harding because the chairperson comes from Harding. If the factory is needed in Mitchell's Plain, because the problem that we want to address in Mitchell's Plain is substance and drug abuse, relate the problem that will be a social problem that will be addressed by this intervention.
Yes, sir. The second element of it is that again, based on the comments that the skills plan, it's important again to share with you the detailed skills plan that includes all the other elements about artisans, learnerships, and all of those, and what is our plan in relation to building capacity at other levels of government, including local government, and how do we maximize also the benefit for those learners through job rotation and placing them at different places, so that we maximize the experience that they have, so that they become truly employable. I think the third issue, Chair, which is linked to the two-part, I think because of the nature of the programs themselves, it's important to share with you the detailed plan in relation to both Sovakalula and Zamba Sonke that deals with the details of the implementation plans with time frames, what is to be done where, in what community, and what are the targets. Preferably, I think, because the manner in which we're doing the annual performance plan, we break the targets quarterly, and I imagine that kind of a detailed plan with quarterly targets would also assist the members in terms of the level of detail that we should be able to assist you in moving forward, so that there is a very clear synergy and understanding whether also we've been able to respond fully to the expectations of the committee and what the minister has committed to in the budget vote, so that the quantum, my understanding, in listening very attentively, the homework we're taking away is that to make sure that these detailed plans that are also shared with the committee.
And also in that plan, Manifika Nizo present, you have negotiated with your sister organization. And the Department of Social Development, if it has a role to play in providing services that are addressing social problems, like if the area that is targeted or the families that are targeted to participate in the program are also identifying teenage mothers that are dependent on the social grant, there is an additional service of counseling those people to make them
realize that the fact that they are provided with a child support grant is not a license for them to produce more children. So a social grant, the social development department has an additional role to play. So negotiating nabo nifike nabo sebe kuyiphathi ye plan ukuthi because we shall be targeting that area enama teenage mothers, sivumelene ne department yaka social services, social development ukuthi ngezikhathi ezithize bayofika la bazoprovide lama services so that we then begin to deal in providing service delivery. We should also develop our communities, and in the implementation process we should work as a project team as opposed to a department, and pull in sister departments as part of the project team, because we are not just delivering a service, but we are developing a community. And when we choose an intervention and a criteria of recruitment, we know what social problem we are addressing in that particular area.
Thanks for that, sir. We'll definitely take those into account. But one other area I wanted to allude to in relation to the skills plan, we've also realized that there is a very strong need to make sure to ensure an alignment between what we're doing as a department and what the CETAs are doing. Because we have realized that CETA, I've just been appointed by the DG to sit on the board of CETA to make sure that there is synergy. But we've also realized that what they've been doing has no connect with what we've been trying to do. And also the local government CETA, that we need to create then those synergies, that all of us are reading from the same script. You don't have a duplication of effort and wastage of resources. There's a lot of money that goes to the CETAs, but we don't see the impact, precisely because that we're trying to do a million things in different places that does not add value to the ultimate goal. And we have agreed, in fact, the board of CETA has agreed that at every board meeting there's a standing item on strategic transport issues in relation to skills development.
Because of that, the money that must have, it develops skills that are not necessarily required. The program was driven by the service providers. When I was in Ugu, we would get phone calls from service providers that have already been given funding, and the training that they wanted us to identify people that are going to be trained. And when we asked them the skills, they would say bricklaying and block manufacturing. And then I would say, but now we are a service authority municipality or a district municipality. We need tenants, plumbers, boiler makers. The problem was, a service provider would apply for the funding and identify an area without talking to us to understand the skills that we need. Everybody ignored what was said by former President Mbeki in the State of the Nation address. South Africa will need to produce the kind of skills that are needed to develop the economy. Two lines. This year, State of the Nation address of President Zuma, the social grant that we are providing has to be linked to the skills development so that we create a situation where people will become self-reliant. Same what you're talking about now. State of the Nation is very, very important for each and every department to analyze and say, how do I relate to that? We have come to the end. Go and improve. We will call you back. Unfortunately, we are closing. We are going to the place. So you will get more than two. You will get areas that invite you. Thank you very much.